Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 150. Yes, the big 150. Having some fun on this one tonight. It's a Tuesday night, so it's Bloom Board night, and heading into the All-Star break. I'm going to have a little fun here for the next few Bloom Board episodes. We'll get you caught up on what we're doing there in a few. We'll talk some news and notes that have taken place in the last couple days as well. But before, as usual, it's a little housekeeping. You can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanPHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
You'd think after 150 episodes, we'd learn how to click the go live button and make that a seamless transition. Really, probably 1500 for you, Bubba. Yep, but yep. We're still learning. We're never perfect.
Never perfect.
I am doing well today. 15-year-old me would be proud of myself today. I purchased after a long hiatus. Purchased an Xbox. Got the controller right here. My favorite game of all time. What used to be called NCAA college football, after an 11-year delay, is back and being released next week. So I bought an entire gaming system just for one game. If anyone out there, anyone listening, plays NCAA college football, planning to get it, hit me up. Let me know. We can talk some shop. But yeah, I was pretty stoked about that. Comes out during the All-Star break. We will still do a Tuesday episode next week, despite the game release. But I'm doing well, so I'm stoked for that.
Good. Yeah, and Ryan can play all day, and then we'll record for an hour and a half or so, and then he can go back to playing his game and enjoy the All-Star break. It's the same night as, I believe, the All-Star game. So
I think so. I'm an old now. So, like, now they release games. So I used to stay up till midnight and go to, like, the GameStop, store. Right, and, like, buy the game. But now you download the game, and I don't know. Yeah, it comes out next Tuesday. I don't know if you stay up till midnight Monday night and do it or what.
I'm guessing it's like when Netflix releases new shows. It's usually midnight Eastern, so you can probably play it at 9 o'clock on Monday night. I'm guessing
you'll get to stick a little 9 p.m. after the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, you'll sneak into your bed at like 3, and your wife will go, "Where have you been? I thought you recorded on Tuesday nights." And yeah, you'll have fun with that answer. So.
That's an ongoing negotiation. Yeah, this will be as much free time as I do have these days. This game will be another time suck, which is the last thing I need, but whatever.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm jealous. I told Ryan, like, I used to play this game. I'll have to wait till the off season. That's just my reality of the situation, and by then Ryan will kick my butt at it pretty easily, so it'll be fun in that regard.
What's up to the chat? We've got we're back on normal time as Michael C's in there, Joe Rico and Kevin. What's up, guys? Any more chatters in there? Let's talk tonight. It's gonna be a fun one. This is gonna be what, like, our first of, I don't know, three or four shows with first half position recaps. And I know every podcast always starts with catchers, but I think it hits extra special when we do it because of you.
Yes, no, it's a touch, and it helps that Logan O'Hoppy double dong tonight. So that'll really get us going in the right direction. Before we get to that, let's talk about some news and notes from the day in the last couple of days. Tyler Glasnow hits the IL on Tuesday with a back injury, stiffened up on him on Sunday, apparently. Yeah, I see your air quotes. I think we're going to see a few of these folks, especially the guys that needed some time to monitor innings potentially. This season, it's the perfect time to do it because it also means they can't pitch in the All-Star game, which is a plus. That's like one reason, like, the Braves aren't monitoring Chris Sale's innings so much, but they moved him to Tuesday, so he also pitches on Sunday now, which makes him ineligible to pitch in the All-Star game. Little things along those regards, like Rafael Devers already said he's not playing to work on his shoulder, so all those guys that got quote unquote snubbed, they'll be in the All-Star game. Like Hunter Green's already got announced. Expect Lindor, Nemo, those guys Christian Walker, like a lot of those guys will probably end up on the team. I'm guessing it's almost getting to the level of the NFL Pro Bowl at these days where
RIP, the former Pro Bowl.
It's getting pretty deep. Like when Jamarcus Russell is a Pro Bowler, you know, things are rough. So those kind of situations, I think. Yeah. So we'll see. But Tyler Glasnow to the IL, he's going to miss the 15 days. So a couple weeks. Hopefully that's all it is a quote unquote phantom injury, but time will tell on that one for sure.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just a semi-educated guess. I wouldn't even call it an educated guess, but I did see a report that the Dodgers did not even bring Glasnow in for imaging on his back. So it's like, if that's true, like if they're obviously not too concerned, And Glasnow would really only miss one start. Glasnow, I think, has 109 innings pitched already this season. So the 2 week break for him makes a ton of sense. Very, very not concerned with this injury. Was very concerned, you know, like around lineup blocks every week, Bubba, you're supposed to like be around and watch the news and react to it. I reacted to the Glasnow news by benching him in favor of Bob Estes. Yeah, oh, no. Estes on Oakland.
Oh, no.
Gave up 8 earned in like an inning and 2/3. So the Glasnow news was a double whammy for my labor team. And that's what I get for actually staying on top of my teams and changing lineups. So
yeah, no, I guess I benefited. I was away from my devices. So it worked out well in that regard. I got the Glasnow news at a later date and time. Zach Wheeler's day-to-day, he left with a back injury. They didn't expect him to play. They said he sat too long in the dugout and his back stiffened up because the, you know, Bobby Miller got blown up.
Because Bobby Miller gave up, I think, 9 earned. So,
So that'll happen. So keep an eye on that. But I wanted to mention this one. DJ Hers went back to AAA. I talked about this on my show with Curlin on Monday. I've written about it a few times because I'm biased for one. I picked him up in a few leagues this past week. But the beat reporters are on it like immediately, which is nice when beat reporters actually do their job. It's appreciative. DJ Hers was sent to AAA. Johan Adon, who's a long reliever, was called up for the Nats. Hers will get his innings monitored essentially in the minors, like kind of just a couple innings here or there. So they'll bring him back up, maybe not the first week back, but he'll be back in a couple weeks most likely. And Hers will keep kicking. And the reason I'm excited about this is I just wanted to bring this up. And a lot of the times we talk bloom boards on this show as the Giants just walked it off on the Jays. Thank you to you Jays guys in the chat there. Bullpen was out. They scored 2 in the 9th. Great job by Trevor Richards.
Come on. Love you say that. Kikuchi, kill the win. Kill the win.
Tyro Estrada comes back off the IL with the walk-off single. So that's a beautiful thing to see. Or the walk-off wild pitch. Estrada didn't hit the ball. Even better. But the DJ Hers thing I wanted to bring up. So people will look at Hers. 5.17 ERA, but then you break it down more like this is a bloom board thing. He has a 3.24 Sierra, a 3.41 XFIP. You look at one of our favorite stats, Ryan, 22.7% K to walk. These are all really, really good stats. And, you know, the K to walk is backed by a 13.4% swinging strike rate for DJ Hers. And the last thing I'll mention, the beautiful thing with these kind of fringy pitchers, especially in 12s like I play, Hers has made 7 starts. He got blown up by St. Louis, got blown up by San Diego, who hits lefties well, and got blown 4 runs and got hit around by the Mets, who we know crushes everybody. At least 2 of those 3, you probably benched them anyways. So I think you benefit from a guy like Hers, and I'm just trying to, I wanted to bring it up. Don't panic, people.
That's good to know, because I actually did not know that, and I wasn't panicking, because I guess losing DJ Hers isn't the worst thing in the world, but I will probably now hold. But
he was like a popular pickup the last like 2 weeks. That's why I think it's a discussion point.
And I mean, Hers had those 2 games. So he has 2 games with double-digit strikeouts and no walks, one of them against the Marlins, but the other one against the Mets. And it's nice to see with Hers his last 5 starts, 4 total walks. And this was a guy with major, major walk issues in the minors. So that's good news. I will now hold DJ Hers in my 15 teamers.
So just wanted to bring that one up because that was a kind of shock to many on Monday when he got sent down after people picked him up on Sunday. But here we are. The Reds, they've been moving. They picked up Austin Slater from the Giants. We appreciate that. Thanks a lot there, Cincinnati. But they also called up one of their another, I don't know if he's a top prospect per se, in Reese Hines. And it's an interesting profile. 2.16 batting average in the minors, but 13 home runs and 12 steals in 77 AAA games. He's homered in his first 2 games since he's been called up in Great American Small Park. So this will be a fun guy, even on a short week next week for Fab. I think he's going to be kind of popular, Ryan.
I think so too. I think we coined Reese Hines as the next, Aristides Aquino, Franmir Reyes. I think in hindsight, this coming week, I think you're going to regret overbidding on Reese Hines. The power is awesome. The park is great. There are playing time questions. But the biggest thing for me, Bubba, at AAA, 38% strikeout rate for Reese Hines. I think this is a guy that's going to just get eaten alive by MLB pitching once, like, his tendencies are known. So yeah, very cool story. Like elite power. I think Eno Saris had a tweet that said if they could give 90 power to a prospect as a grade, Hines would have it. But I'm trying not to get caught up in the hype right now, but it is cool to see, just from an actual baseball standpoint.
A lot of in hindsight tweets will be coming out in about 2 weeks probably on that one, so just get ready for that, folks. Yeah. Might come out on the show a few times. We have another one. Pittsburgh, Bailey Falter and Jerry Jones are on the IL. Jones actually doesn't seem phantom. That's going to be a legit one there. Falter is just faltering around right now. But Luis Ortiz, I wanted to bring him up. This is a former one of those big-time prospects that kind of fizzled out, didn't get it figured out with the Pirates. He's been a primarily bullpen arm, where he's been actually pretty good this year out of the pen. But he's made two starts in his last three appearances. He's gone six innings in each start, one total earned run, and 12 strikeouts at Great American and against the Mets. Those are not cakewalk situations. So this is a guy I just wanted to bring up, because in a world where we need pitching, he's going to get a good little leash here, because Jones is going to be out for about three more weeks at least on this one. And really, are we missing any? Like, if Ortiz is good, is Bailey Falter really taking care of business there? Probably not. So this seems like a chance to get a guy for the second half, like, that could potentially bring some strikeout upside. And right now, not killing your ratios.
No, not at all. And like you said, the skills look great. The 2.95 ERA with a 3.18 FIP, not bad. I worry about the walk rate. Historically for Luis Ortiz has always been in double digits, around like 12% the last couple of years. That's down to 7%, so that's great. Let's see how that holds in a in the rotation. But yeah, I agree, given like the glob of shaky 15 team pitching out there, Luis Ortiz is attractive. And like you said, given the Jones thing, that's not a phantom Ielston, I don't think at all. I think Luis Ortiz will have plenty of leash in the rotation, and it's a great sign that he has already gone six innings. That's always a thing for me when you see that that transition. How quickly are these folks able to get to five, six innings and qualify for a win? So Luis Ortiz has checked a few of those boxes already, which is good.
Yep, very, very good. Given a mascot update here on Tuesday, because we got one on Tuesday with, and it's a good update, folks. This is good. Our buddy Luis Rengifo, for those maybe new to the show, that's the mascot of the show. And if you wonder why, I hate to say it, but you can just start listening back in like November episodes. We've been talking to Luis Rengifo for quite some time, like too many times. Like Ryan thought I was crazy for a while, and he finally, you know, came around on that one.
We did position previews and, yes, and reviews and preview, and Luis Rengifo qualifies at every position. So he just came up in every episode every week. So eventually, yes, that's dubbed him the mascot.
And the good news is, because when he went on the IL, it was a wrist injury. We didn't know the severity of it. And apparently, you know, you have to let swelling go down for proper MRIs and everything. So, like, we always joke about the initial, oh, after the game, they got the imaging and it's good. You got to kind of wait sometimes. Rengifo just has inflammation, which is great to hear. So he's basically got it's not great, but it's not like no ligaments, nothing like that. And in reality, he could be back in like 2 weeks it's kind of like swelling to go down. I have bad backs. Not all of you probably do, but if you have swelling, you just got to let it go down and then you can start rehabbing back and you're good to go. And they have top-notch technology in baseball. Maybe not the Angels, but in baseball they do. So Rengifo, we might be back in like 2 weeks, Ryan, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is good for him, good for the show, good for anyone that has Luis Rengifo. It has been an awesome season for him, so it would suck for this to go to waste. So all-star break hitting at the right time for our mascot.
Definitely. And I just wanted to mention, I saw on Tuesday as we record, Brian Wu will be activated from the IL to pitch this weekend. So he'll be back, which is good news. Might be too late to put in your weekly lineups, of course, but something to monitor going forward. And if I'm the Mariners, I throw him for like three innings on Saturday and be like, okay, we'll use you in the second half, kid. But we'll kind of see how that goes. But Wu is coming back.
I'm surprised they're even throwing Brian Wu.
Yeah, I don't know why you bring
for
him back
one
on, like,
start
Saturday.
before the break. But and I mean, on the good side, given that we know nothing about Brian Wu and have been wrong every single time we talk about Brian Wu's health, the Mariners being willing to throw Wu for one start before the break means they're confident in his health, right? You would think. Yep, so that's a good sign.
All right, I'm going to enter. We have a couple of questions in the chat. I was going to save till the end of the show, but we'll bring them up right now just before we get into our recaps here. We'll start with Joel in the chat here. He's got a dynasty question. Would you trade Corbin Carroll for Wyatt Langford straight up?
Oh, my God. I would hold on to Carroll. That's tough though.
I want Crawford. Langford. Langford. I want Langford. Sorry, I want Langford. Yes, Wyatt Langford.
I can see it. He is turning things. Look at Wyatt in June, and yeah, yep, I can see it.
And then Mike Virginia says, thoughts on Brooks Lee rest of season. I'll give you the floor first. I talked about him with Kerwin a ton, and I added him in every single league. So I saw that. I have my bias on this one, so I'll let you have the floor first.
I picked up some Brooks Lee as well. Spent big on him in labor.
Are you the one that outbid DVR?
No, different labor.
Different league. Gotcha.
But oh wait, no, I did. Yes, I did outbid DVR. Because
you mentioned it on Racing Barrels. Right. I think it was you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I did outbid DVR. I went pretty aggressive, just position need. It's one of those where like I think the talent's there for Brooks Lee. I think he can actually like translate and be in, not an impact guy, but like I don't think he'll struggle immediately in the majors. We've already seen that. I just worry about the playing time. But the reason I bid is so aggressively is I think Royce Lewis is out for some time, and you just like, I don't know. It's similar to what we're talking about with like pitching with like Paul Skeens and guys like getting shut down in September. Get the guys and worry about the playing time later. I think Brooks Lee at least has a solid month of an audition. And if he keeps hitting, the Twins will find a way to keep his bat in the lineup or someone else will get hurt. So that was kind of my outset on Brooks Lee.
Yeah, we're pretty much on the same page. They're like, he's going to play third base. Now he's going to be shortstop, third base eligible. How many times on this show do we talk about middle infield and corner infield issues? Mm-hmm. Like all the time. Like, so he feels checks two boxes right there. Great hit tool. He'll hit for average. Power starting to develop. He's still only 23. Like that might not fully develop for another year or two, but it's developing now, which is great to see. Not a ton of speed, but he's doing a little bit of everything out there. And before he got called up, they were moving him to second base because they wanted him to take over second base in the second half of the year. So even when Lewis comes back, it's almost like they want him to play second base, like move Willy Castro back to utility or something. Mm-hmm. So there's so many avenues, like you said, if he hits like he already is and should hopefully keep hitting, I think it's great. I'll ask you the question because Joe G asked this. Everybody knows Joe G from Twitter. He said Colt Keith or Brooks Lee, because I see a lot of similarities between the two.
Hate to go against country music star Colt Keith, but I'd go Brooks Lee.
Yeah, I'm with you on Brooks Lee. I have little pieces of both. Keith's actually had a little bit longer to develop in the big, so he's starting to really start clicking, but I think Lee's the dude I want as well. And
playing time safer with Keith. So in like deep little leagues, I think that matters, but I don't know.
And to top it off, the Twins have the fourth best offense in baseball. So Lee will benefit greatly from that situation as well. So yeah, a lot of good stuff there, and it was a fun week in Fab, which there's many shows that recapped Fab, James Wood, and all the goodies there. We will not do that in this show, but what we will do right now is we're going to start our Bloom Board situations here. We're going to go our position recaps for the first half of the season, and we'll do catcher, first base, and third base tonight. And Ryan, if you want to kind of let everybody know what we're looking at when you pull up the boards, let's get rocking and rolling.
All right, so this is the format for the next couple of weeks. We are going to, since we are halfway through the season, and quite honestly, as podcasters podcasting twice a week about baseball when there are no games being played, we had to come up with some not evergreen content, but a few shows worth of content. So we are doing first half reviews by position. And so, of course, in Bloomboard fashion, had to whip something up with color codes and that sort of thing. So what we're looking at here is the top 24, and this will be the same for every position, maybe more outfielders, starting pitchers, whatever. But we're looking at the top 24 catchers by preseason ADP. And that's main event, NFBC main event ADP. So this is all late March ADP. That is how the players are listed on the board. And then with their preseason ADP, and then on the right side next to it, the thing that's color coded is their year to date rank, courtesy of the Fangraphs player rater. So there's two columns for year to date rank. There's overall, so you can kind of compare. For catchers, it's tough. It's a little bit more of a valuation thing, which we won't get into. But you can kind of compare the ADP with the overall rank across the entire player pool, but then there's also position rank as well. So I wanted to kind of get both of those on there. No stats or anything for that. We'll look at ADP rank, and then as part of our quote unquote analysis, we'll paint some stats on there and go from there. But won't talk about every single catcher, every single player, but just interesting halfway through the season to kind of look back at what ADP was and where certain pockets were fruitful and where others were not.
Yeah, we'll start with catcher, and just right out the gate, the beautiful thing about bloom boards is just the color coding in general to catch your eyes. Catchers, if you paid, you benefited right now. And that was a big conversation point in draft season, because the depth from 2023 was, could you wait? Could you do this? Like, how would you approach the catcher's position? And right now, if you went Rutschman, William Contreras, Will Smith, Yainer Diaz, who was heated up over the last month, Salvi Perez. So you got five of the top six off the board are literally top six at the position, which is beautiful. The one thing is, you know, Rutschman was a premium. That's about round 5-6 and a 12. It's a round 4-5 and a 15. You had to pay a little bit for Contreras and Smith, but when you talk Yainer Diaz and Salvi Perez, that's post ADP 100. So there's still some goodness. You didn't have to like go super early, and you could still get at least a top catcher one pretty easily.
Yep, you nailed it there with the top five. Except for JT Realmuto,
the injury,
that one's rough. Injury, yeah. But also like he wasn't running. I think JTR had a steal or two, and that's it. But yes, we can play the injury card probably with JTR there. And even Wilson Contreras, if we play the injury card with Wilson Contreras, who was being taken right next to Salvador Perez. Wilson Contreras is 13th overall at catcher, but has missed a good amount of time as well. So I'd be hesitant to even call that one a bust. But yeah, if you went early on catcher, at least through the first half, you are sitting quite pretty. I'm impressed with Adley Rutschman in terms of like looking back in L's and that sort of thing. We were both off Adley Rutschman just at the price. He was pretty much by far the most expensive catcher. And not only is Adley number two behind, you know, the legend Willie Contreras, but Adley is 16th overall. And again, I don't know how Fangraphs player rater adjusts for catchers and that sort of thing. There's probably some adjustment there, but Adley being 16th overall is just a huge step forward for him. I know the prospect folks like love Adley Rutschman. I was just off him because of the plate patience and more of like an OBP guy than 5x5 and average. That's one thing I should also add. This is 5x5 league rankings for the player rater, so not OBP or points or anything like that.
Adley was 16 home runs already on the season. Like I was like, okay, he'll hit for average. OBP is amazing. I'm like you. I'm like, is he a three category guy? What's he going to be? And he's a beast. William, everyone knows, at least should know, my love for William Contreras. It's pretty simple. I have William or Yainer on a lot of my leagues as my catcher one. We'll get to my catcher two, who is number five overall right now. He's one of my catchers two. There's others that aren't great on this list. We'll get to that too. I will take the L on this. And this is one of those that I stood fast on every season I've done this. I didn't take any Will Smith yet again. And he's third overall at the position. He did that triple home run night the other night, triple dong, which was impressive. But he continues to do it. And it's one of my, you know, biases that I can't get past, apparently. 274, 15 homers, 55 RBIs, continues to play extremely well. And the player rater showing that he was worth the ADP if you took the chance.
Yainer Diaz, you mentioned Bubba, the slow start. And yeah, we had some questions, I recall, a few weeks ago, right, about do we drop Yainer Diaz? Yainer Diaz in May hit 200 with no homers, five runs. June, Yainer Diaz hit 362 with four bombs, hitting 300 in July. So if you played the patience card with Yainer Diaz, you've been gratefully rewarded. And the number six overall catcher, drafted fifth at the position, entering and trending the right way. Wouldn't be surprised maybe if maybe not. I like Ohapi better than Yainer the rest of the way. But Yainer Diaz, fears have been qualmed with that slow start.
And it's kind of a testament to, we talk about a lot with questions on this show, probably questions we get in DMs and elsewhere, that there's certain players you just have to just be patient. You just have to, because like, it doesn't always work out. Obviously, we're going to talk about some guys it doesn't work out on, but like a guy like Yainer Diaz, you took a 114 ADP. You took him as a pretty high pick, all things considered, like around 10 pick as a catcher one. He's the fifth catcher off the board. So you took the chance, you trusted him. He wasn't hurt. So it was one of those, like, you just got to kind of wait it out and see how it goes and either sink with the ship or it works. Because he's one of those, if you drop him, there was always the chance this could happen, and that's going to sting so much worse. And, like, if you dropped Yainer Diaz to go stream, like, Elias Diaz in a week in Coors Field, you'd be hating your life right now. like in a true, and that was like, those are the kind of questions we were getting at one point. And we'll talk about guys like Bo Naylor and we'll get to him, but I've dropped him. I've accepted that L, but look where you took him. Like there's different, and it's just totally different skill sets. So we'll get to that in a minute. But so yeah, you mentioned Wilson Contreras. He's already, you know, got 3 or 4 home runs since coming back from the IL. I think by the end of the season, he'll be one of those guys that'll be a top 10 at the position for sure.
Always
top 7 or 8. Like he just plants him in there because he's doing a lot of DH. It's one thing we talked about in the preseason, Ryan. Like he's following that trend where so many DH at bats is paying off quite well. One that surprises me, and he double donged tonight as well, is Cal Raleigh, the big dumper. ADP 151, 9th at the position, Ryan.
Yep, he has been fantastic. The power has been great for Cal Raleigh, who just kind of quietly led all catchers in home runs each of the previous 2 seasons. I'm not sure where he ranks on that list this year, but it's probably pretty damn high. So great year for Cal Raleigh. Real quick, just a question in the chat, and this kind of segues into the next kind of group we're going to talk about. But Steven asked, what were people's draft strategies with catchers? Go early rounds or wait it out and grab a middle guy? I think it kind of depended, like drafting holds. I think catchers were going up a little bit more just because you didn't want to have that like zero for quite a while. But our general strategy, if I recall correctly, was non-William Contreras division, skipping out on those early catchers and taking this kind of next group. Right, this middle tier from like ADP 150 to where's like Heim 180. That's where we kind of live. There are a bunch of catchers in there, and it has been, I'd say, hit or miss, maybe a little more miss than hit so far.
Yeah, there was like, yeah, it was William and Yiner for me, or it was wait till basically a hoppy down. That was pretty much my world, and it's been hit and miss, like you said. So it's and you can tell the teams are doing well, and pretty simple in that regard. So yeah, Cal Raleigh, been impressive. We'll hit Francisco Alvarez, man. Since he came back from the injury, he's been really good. So he's another guy.
Yes.
He'll be like top 12. He'll be a catcher 1 by the end of the season, barring an injury. His bat's outstanding. So that's been a fun one. But let's talk about him. Let's do it. Logan Ohapi. And I have to go back and find my bold predictions, because I think I had Ohapi as a top 5 catcher at the end of the season. I think that was on the list of things we discussed. And 2 more home runs tonight, hitting 282, 14 homers, 41 runs, 42 RBIs on the season. He's amazing. He is the 5th overall catcher, and he had an ADP of 157. So if you took the Ohapi chance, and you listeners, I love you, but when I drafted with you, I hated you because you knew who I liked, and you made this very complicated for me. But in leagues I wasn't in with you guys, I have my shares of Logan Ohapi.
Yeah, and it's been even beneath the hood, everything looks great for Ohapi. Like he has held the plus power that we saw in 2023, and there were questions about the power with Logan Ohapi, like with I was thinking it was a torn labrum, his left shoulder. Like we were curious what the power would look like with Ohapi in 2024, that is no longer a concern. And he's actually hitting for a better batting average, like skill supported with that, up from 230 last year up to like 275 right now for Ohapi. So I think that's been the big thing, is not only is Ohapi hitting for power, but the batting average has been there. And like you said, double dong tonight. So maybe pushing top 3, top 4 at some point soon.
Yeah, he could showcase Cal Raleigh power with a legit batting average, which is... yeah, going to be crazy when all things are, because William Contreras, he had the power 2 years ago. Last year, he had the average. He hasn't really put it both together yet. Ohapi's kind of putting both together, which is really interesting to watch. I'm looking forward to our recaps at the end of the year to see like where these lists kind of change up a little bit. Both elite, and Ohapi's going to cost a premium next year like the rest of the guys, but really pumped them. And one last thing is, you mentioned the shoulder when everyone's concerned, but one thing we talked about on this show a lot, and others probably did as well, is when he came back, he scuffled for like 2 to 3 weeks from his injury, and we're like, okay, he's notched it up. But then like his last 3 or 4 weeks, the power came back, and that got me a lot more confident in the situation, because those shoulder injuries are no joke, especially at the catcher's position.
That's a nice takeaway for next year, not just Ohapi base, but just in general.
Yep. There's Moreno, Mitch Garver, who is hitting for a ton of power and no batting average, so that's fun. Depends, like he's basically the expensive man's Shea Langeliers, so pick your poison there. We'll get to Shea in a minute because he actually pops on this board here. And then there's Bo Naylor. We could talk about it if anybody wants. I don't really need to anymore. I think I've exhausted this one, but I loved the skill sets last year. The skill sets this year are completely gone. It looks like a completely different hitter right now at the plate. I dropped him anywhere I can. He's not on my roster right now. Let's just put it that way. I'm still optimistic in the future. Like, if you're in a dynasty league, I like Bo Naylor. But for the rest of this season, like, I saw some smart guys pick him up again this week off the waiver wire because catching does get bleak. So you never know. He did go deep over the weekend, I believe. But I'm still kind of lukewarm on Bo Naylor.
No, agreed. And I Bo Naylor being 29th for catchers so far in the first half, that is terrible. And that's a loss on, that's an L on my part too, for sure. So not great for Bo Naylor. And I don't know how much, you know, hope there is, but yeah, I mean, he's probably better than your like wasteland second catcher, but not much from what we've seen so far in 2024. It's interesting. So like right below him is Kiber Ruiz.
Yep.
Who is 27th at catcher, so just two spots ahead of Naylor. But a lot of that was injury and, or I guess, illness induced. Yep,
lost like 40 pounds or something.
Yeah, I think, 20 something. He lost a ton. He got sick and lost a ton of weight. If I had to pick between Bo Naylor, Kiber Ruiz the rest of the year, it's not even close. Like, Kiber Ruiz actually over the last month, I think has three homers hitting over 270. We're starting to see that kind of now that Ruiz is healthy. Even though it looks bad on this board being, you know, the 15th catcher off the board and being 27th so far on the player rater at the position, I think Kiber Ruiz could end up being top 15 easily the rest of the way. He looks like he's back.
Went deep again on Tuesday night. So he's definitely coming back. Jonah Heim's a fun one here. ADP 183, 11th at the position on the player rater. And I say it's a fun one because draft season, there was a lot of mixed reviews on Jonah Heim, like a lot, because the comments were, well, he hit 258 last year with 95 RBIs. That's not sustainable. No, 95 is not at a catcher position. He had 18 homers, 61 runs. Well, right now at the midway point, almost 244, eight homers, 31 and 36. Like, he could legit go, what, 245 with 15, 60, 60. That's pretty darn good at the catcher position, especially at that ADP. And that's why I liked him as a catcher too. I'm like, I'm not expecting him to be my catcher one. You don't have to draft him like your catcher one. So I'm happy to see Jonah Heim rating out here because there was a lot of naysayers on later in draft season on him.
Yeah, but I mean, Jonah Heim's second half was awful last year. And that was kind of the debate, was like, but there was an injury at play too. So like he got hurt and then the second half was really bad. So it was like, well, do we blame it on the injury? If, you know, there's been research out there. If you do blame it on the injury, chances are they still don't bounce back, but Jonah Heim absolutely has. I think the other big thing with Jonah Heim, Bob, he doesn't get like a ton of DH games, but he's got seven. He's got 300 plate appearances already. Guy plays all the time. Power's come back. Power is exactly where it was last year and an uptick from what we saw in the second half. 18 barrels on eight homers. Really good strikeout rate for Jonah Heim. So I think this is a top 10 catcher right around there the rest of the way. This looks legit compared to the next guy. It's kind of crazy. Like, there was a big Jonah Heim, Mitch Garver debate entering the season. But then there was Henry Davis going right after Jonah Heim, kind of a trendy. He's not catcher eligible yet. He will be. And once he is, he's going to be great. Man, he got catcher eligibility super quickly. Remember, Henry Davis, he'll hit, but he might not get catcher eligibility till like May or June. It's the exact opposite. He got catcher eligibility right away and just never was able to hit. So,
well, I'm just going to say, as I take my L's like Bo Naylor and company, I'm going to take my W on Henry Davis because I was anti all the hype on Henry Davis. So, again, second half of the season can prove me wrong, but so far so good on that one, folks. I'm pretty excited about that. Luis Campusano is a very interesting one to me. Like, the batting average tool is pretty good. Power has been intermittent. He's been injured. And the concern for me with Campusano, and like, I added him for, I think, $3 in an OC recently. I got to put Naylor for him. But there's a world, if a better catcher comes up, Campusano's gone because Higashioka's playing like splitting time or playing more than him right now. So that's there you go. Michael C in the chat has the comment on that. So that one worries me quite a bit.
I actually dropped Luis Campusano in a 15 teamer last week. He was a third catcher. I think someone was hurt and I got Ben Rice and someone else came back or something. And I didn't think too hard about it actually. Because yeah, for all those reasons you just said, and now the playing time might be at risk. I remember in draft season, Campusano, we were saying, was like the last guy before this cliff of catchers. And I mean, it hasn't been like a disaster for Campusano, but it hasn't been great either.
Pretty close. We'll skip over the next guy out of courtesy for Joe Rico in the chat, who asked us to pass by him, but you can guess he's one of the two guys in Toronto. So have fun there. Tyler Stevenson has been blah. Like, as a catcher too, at pick 239 is not horrible. He hasn't been horrible, but it's not what you want. But again, you're playing 30 catchers. He's 19th on the play radar, so it's not crushing you. But let's talk Shea Langeliers. Now, this is where you got to start asking Fangraphs, like, what do we prioritize on the player radar? Apparently, they like power. I'll say that much. And because Shea Langeliers has 17 home runs this year. Shea Langeliers is hitting 209 on the season. He's the 8th catcher on the player radar. So it's one of those debates. Are you willing to punt batting average for the production Shea Langeliers brings?
Right. And like, yeah, so I am not a valuation wonk. So I just take the numbers as they are. But like rest of season, I'd rather have Jonah Heim, who's 11th right now, than Langeliers, who is 8th. But yeah, like, dude, the power was really good last year, and Langeliers has upped it a notch. 31 home runs already. 31 home runs, 16% barrel rate for Shea. Langeliers, I think we had a comment in the chat with the home run totals for catchers at somewhere. Chat's really hopping tonight. It's awesome.
I love it.
I think Langeliers leads all catchers in home runs.
Langeliers leads catchers with 17 homers. Raleigh now tied with Adley at 16.
I think Ohapi's like at 14 after two tonight. So great first half for Shea Langeliers. I'm still just very worried. It's still a 30% strikeout rate. Like, I still think this is I don't love the park. I don't love the team. Like, I think we saw the best from Shea Langeliers in the first half, but still very profitable from where you took Langeliers at 258. So,
yeah, like 100 picks earlier, basically, you took Mitch Garver doing the same thing, and he's 16th on the list. Now, the question is, would you rather have Garver or Langeliers rest of the season?
It's tough. Probably Langeliers. There's a chance Garver's like just on the downside of his career and
fades
into oblivion.
I have Garver rostered in like four leagues where I got to like drop Bo Naylor basically. So I'm just riding that one out because he's still actually been better than Bo Naylor. But again, it's like Campusano, Garver. If they're, I tried to get Ben Rice to replace them and I couldn't. So it's one of those kind of scenarios on that one. Ben Rice went deep again on Tuesday night.
Yes, he did.
All right, the last one we'll mention here, because this has been a roller coaster of emotions, is Ryan Jeffers. He's technically the 7th catcher on the player radar because of his amazing start to the year. But if you look at Ryan Jeffers, March, April, 295, 5 homers. May, 214, but 7 homers. June, 161, 1 homer. July, 333, 1 homer. So maybe he's starting to get it going
that's
again.
That's good.
The biggest problem is he's not playing regularly. He played almost every day, either DHing or catching early in the season. Now he's basically platooning, which is making things complicated to roster him regularly. Like I have him, but it's not an auto play like it once was. Let's put it that way.
And you had to go ahead and do all those Ryan Jeffers home run count tweets every time. And those have been quiet lately, my friend.
Very quiet. I think I even missed the last one because I forgot he even keeps playing for the Twins.
So I say that the July, three whatever batting average is great, but 17 plate appearances. So who knows? But still, where you drafted Ryan Jeffers, 261 ADP, like you are thrilled.
He's paid off
with what you have for sure. Couple names since this board is just by preseason ADP, we kind of missed the breakouts. David Fry, right, when it was undrafted, he is number 10 catcher on the player radar. Connor Wong was a 336 ADP, super late in drafts. I remember Connor Wong. I do have a few Connor Wongs on my teams just because it was like I need a living, breathing second catcher who does something, and Connor Wong has absolutely done that. Patrick Bailey's up here, 410 ADP, 13th. I don't know where Ben Rice is, but like Ben Rice, obviously undrafted, and I would imagine will be a top 10, 15 catcher the second half. And then who's the dude from the White Sox? Corey Lee. I want to say Corey Brooks Lee, but Corey Lee. has been. I don't know where he's at on the player radar. I forgot. I didn't write him down, but or type him. I don't write things down like you.
Yeah.
But Corey Lee's been good.
I like those honorable mentions because Wong, Bailey, and Lee are a lot of catcher threes on my drafted hold teams, a lot of them. So that's been saving me because Bo Naylor was my catcher two on most of those teams. So that's been very nice.
What's your take real quick? Patrick Bailey wore down at the end of last year, admitted he did it. Will that happen again this year?
I don't think so. I think the fact that they kept running him out there to build him up, I'm shooting for the best. He came in, I guess, quote unquote, better shows in like, you know, stronger, like that kind of
another build. Year. I mean, yeah.
So I'm going to say we're good. We're good on that one.
All right. Let's go first base.
Let's head to first base, a great position. And it kicks off with Freddie Freeman, who it's funny because he's just been so consistently good. It's almost gotten boring from Freddie Freeman, but he's third on the player radar this year, hitting .299 with 13 home runs. And people are probably like, he's underwhelming them, but he's still been that good.
Yeah, I don't have much to say. Yeah, it does. That's a good point, though. It does feel underwhelming for Freddie Freeman. Like, he was my first-round pick in labor. But, you look up and 19th overall, number three at the position, hitting .358 RBI, 55 runs. This is just what he does, and it's awesome.
Matt Olson is crushing people right now. 20th at the position, 13 homers, hitting .239 with 42 RBIs. And maybe you see something that I don't, but I'm not as optimistic. Like the barrel rates, like a lot of the metrics we like with Matty Olson aren't what they once were, it feels like. And could he get hot at any moment? Sure. But the strikeout rate's up and whatnot. So I'm a little worried about Matt Olson.
I think it's not a great buy low. I think it's a buy low, though. I just think this is someone with a 3-year track record of elite power. We knew he wasn't going to repeat 2023, but Matt Olson still was a top 20 pick. I think I trust 3 years of that track record over a bad half season. So I like Matty Olson to turn things around, but still, yeah, like you, this has been a disappointing pick for sure. Like you, and you built around that, like you had to, in your draft, you were taking a guy early without any stolen bases. And you had to kind of, from a roster construction standpoint, build for that. And it just, like assuming you'd get 40 plus home runs, and it just hasn't happened. So a major bust, I would say, given where Matt Olson was taken, especially because you can't blame him on injury or anything like that, at least injury that we know of.
And there was a lot of early busts. Most of the first round has been injured this year. So yes, Olson's like a second and 15s, a third and 12s, and or second and both, actually. And so that makes things tough. Harper, number one at the position. Love Bryce. I have been thumping that hammer for a long time this draft season, so that's pretty easy for me. Pete Alonso, ninth at the position, and this is fun because he's another guy similar to Freeman to me, or it feels like, you know, especially with the all-star stuff, it's like, why is Pete Alonso, blah, 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 blah. 18 homers, .237. The average is still down, but dude's going to have 100 runs, 100 RBIs, and probably close to 40 home runs by the end of the season, which plays pretty well at the first base position.
Yep, agreed. I was hoping for more. Maybe we will still see it. I was hoping for even more of a batting average bounce back. Remember, Alonso hit .262 and .271 in 2021 and 2022. That tanked at .217 last year. I thought it might bounce all the way back, given his pretty decent strikeout rates, to only see it bounce back to .240 to me is a little bit disappointing for Pete Alonso. And that's why he's only ninth, because the power is still there and well and good. And can't wait to watch him in the Derby between my college football video game
play. That's about to say when. Vlad Guerrero Jr., seventh on the list. Vladito, I'm going to
get some props here.
This is a guy I have him in tout for the OBP skills pretty much nowhere else. So this one's hurting right now, but seventh on the list, and you just look at this month by month, horrific to start the year in March and April. In May, he hit .357, but only two homers. We made fun of the ground balls. June, .318 with 8 home runs. Now, he's only hitting .261 in July, over 23 at-bats, 26 plate appearances, but that month of June got him skyrocketing up this list. And before I let you run with your Vlad love, Carlos Marcano wants to know, will Vladito finish as a top three first baseman?
Top three, no. Top three, no. I think you'd Harper have a Freeman chance.
Locked in.
Harper Freeman's already locked in. So, like, Guerrero has to beat the field. And I will always bet the field on pretty much anything. So, the big thing with Guerrero, like, if the Blue Jays, if Joe Rico's here, if the Blue Jays were a good team, a good offense, this would be even higher because, like, Vlad hitting 295, quote unquote, only 44 runs and like 50 RBI. That could be even more if like a Bo Bichette was hitting. If a George Springer, I know George Springer has heated up lately, but if a first half leadoff George Springer was getting on base, like this could be even better for Vlad Jr. And it's still, man, a 52% ground ball rate and 13 home runs for Vlad Jr. Like, I just don't see that changing. So, no, I'm not just going to gush over Vlad here. It's been a good season. It's been a really good run recently, but there are still some warts, and the Blue Jays not being a good lineup so far and potentially selling off pieces in the second half may only hurt Vlad Jr.'s team context the rest of the way.
Yeah, no, it's great to see him doing it. I'm still like, I need more long term, not hit the ball on the ground stuff. That's what I'm looking for from Vlad.
Yep.
Bellinger's been a disappointment. Goldie, we've talked about that enough. I'm not going to make you rehash that. Costas hurt. Christian Walker, the second first baseman.
Go ahead. I'll be back.
I'll keep this one quiet because I know it affects your Goldschmidt love as well. But Christian Walker's second right now on the season. 22 home runs, 65 RBIs while hitting 265 for Christian Walker. He's doing it all over the place, and it's been quite impressive with Christian Walker. 16.5% barrel, best of his career. Hard hit rate's pretty much in line with his career. I don't have a lot of bad things to say about Christian Walker. He's actually improved his fly ball rate even more this year, which is not always a great thing, but it's working out pretty good right now, I'd say. So, Christian Walker is a man amongst boys. I think he might finish like fifth or sixth on the season at the position. Like, there will be a slump for Christian Walker, most likely. But, this dude's been having a heck of a season.
Yeah. So, for listeners that may not know why I'm like depressed and Bubba's all happy, we did a little side bet when we did our first base preview. My Paul Goldschmidt versus your Christian Walker. They were 7 picks apart in ADP at first base entering the year. And I'm already. We'll probably ship you a case of noons for how bad I lost that one. So it's not great. Looking longer, but kind of bigger picture at the position though, Bubba, like especially this top 10, since, I mean, Walker was the ninth first baseman off the board. Really half of them, I would say, are busts. I would count Matt Olson as a bust, just given where he was drafted. Bellinger bust, 22nd at the position, drafted, what, 6th? Goldschmidt bust, Casas bust, injury, but bust. And Christian Encarnacion Strand bust. So if you went early at first base, 50% chance you're either decently happy or you're pretty pissed and trying to find some reinforcements at first base, which in both of our experiences this year has been pretty tough to find.
One that it checks out, because after Walker, there's only like five guys I'd say that really have panned out of the position.
Yeah.
It gets bad quick. It's like you said it out of the top 10, there's only like half of them have done well. Well, out of the next like 15, it feels like about 6 did well. So it's not great in regards to that. Like, you know, CES is out for the year, so that was tough. But guys like Spencer Steer and Josh Naylor. So Spencer Steer, he's 6th at the position. We were wondering playing time. Could he repeat? We had a bunch of questions about Spencer Steer. Yes. Like, draft and hold, the ADP made sense. Redrafted, it makes sense, so on and so forth. And then Josh Naylor, who we love. Like, that's not the issue with Josh Naylor. We just thought his ADP, there was similar player profiles going later. So we, like, I know I don't have nearly Agreed. As much as I would like of Josh Naylor. And that's one of those, like, Steer and Naylor, 6th and 4th of the position, making us look pretty rough. Looking back on this one, we might not be complaining about the first base position on every fab preview if we just would have took these two guys.
Exactly. And I mean, the next guy's a bust as well, Spencer Torkelson, who's going right after Spencer Steer and Josh Naylor. So that just goes back. It's just funny that this pocket of first baseman, CES, Steer, Naylor, Torkelson, the buns on that sandwich have molded the meat part of the sandwich was great.
Yep, it was meaty though, very meaty. And then other than that, before we head over to third base, like Alec Bohm's 5th of the position, that's pretty impressive. He's kind of cooled down, it feels like, of late. He had a really great start. We'll see where that goes. I'm not excited about him in the Home Run Derby. That one kind of surprised me, but so be it.
He's in the Home Run Derby?
Oh, yeah, he's like the first one to announce. It's really weird. Like, I saw that, and I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be a rough year. But then Pete Alonso and Ozuna and some other guys showed up. I'm like, okay, at least we have some actual home run.
Okay, yeah, because Bohm is like,
yeah,
I don't think league average power.
When I think Home Run Derby, I don't think Alec Bohm. And that's not a slight on him, but it's more like that's there's so many guys in this league that I'm not Bohm's not the dude for me.
You know why Alec Bohm hasn't, so for the reasons I talked about Vlad Jr. in team context, you know why Alec Bohm is fifth? Dude has 70 RBI, dude.
He's the Jonah Heim of the corner infield.
Holy God. Because I mean Philadelphia has been just an unreal lineup. And Alec Bohm is reaping the benefits of that. I did not realize he had 70 RBI. That's nuts, dude.
Yep, he's benefiting tremendously. And then just real quick, Vinny Pascatino is getting healthier. He's played really well over the last like 3 or 4 weeks, I'd say. Paredes is just consistently doing his thing. And then the Candyman, Candelario, after a slow start, has been awesome. And those are your 13th, 15th, and 16th at the position.
My strategy going into the season was to not take an early first baseman outside of Freddie Freeman, really, and to wait on like a Jake Berger. I know we both have a ton of Rizzo. I think Rizzo was your most owned player when we did our player shares episode.
Not anymore, but yes.
Yeah, he's now hopefully on zero of your non-draft and whole teams. And so like if you did miss on that early first base or you just waited at first base, chances are it's been pretty tough because like Sal Perez is listed here, but he's being used as a catcher. So really, if you waited and you had to take an Alec Bohm, Vinny P, or maybe Paredes, but that's even value. God, I had a lot of Brandon Drury and Rizzo, and those guys at 80th and 35th. I know Drury's been hurt the whole time, but like those are two major whiffs. And like you just made a great point, Bub. If you whiffed on first base, it's been very hard to try and pick that up.
Yeah, so like Candelario was my kind of like corner infield guy. The way things have gone, he's on my first baseman, which in a 12, that's not who you want as your first baseman. Like, I like his skill set. Production's good. It's not who you want at first base. Give us some of the guys that just missed or we get undrafted or whatever.
No, that's where I was going next. Good call. It's almost like we do this.
Yep.
The quote-unquote breakouts. Alec Burleson from undrafted. He is the 10th first baseman off the player radar. Jake Cronenworth, a 298 ADP after that huge Korea game that inflated some of this main event ADP. Jake Cronenworth is the 11th first baseman off the board. And then my guy, the Mr. Thursday night on Bubba and the Bloom, Fab Previews, Ryan O'Hearn, went from undrafted to 17th. So those are like the, and that's what I the mean.
Hidden gems.
Yeah, those are the quote unquote hidden gems. That's exactly what we mean when we said, like, if you didn't hit on first base, you've been probably struggling there all year because those quote unquote breakouts, they've been fine, but like they're not really even breakouts. They're just guys that are usable that you picked up off Fab.
Yep. That's kind of where we're looking there. So let's head to the hot corner, third base, where there's less green there, it feels like, than there was at first base. I'm just going to guess flat out say that one. It's a rough look as Ryan loads up the board here, but I'll cut to
it. I'm clicking the wrong buttons here, man.
Your top two off the board, picked 16th and 20th, is J-Ram and De La Cruz, Ellie, second and third overall at the position. That seems pretty self-explanatory. Let's talk Austin Riley, 21st overall, 17th at the position, slowly getting going, I would say. But how are you feeling about Austin Riley? Because, you know, you said you're still optimistic on Matt Olson. Are you still optimistic on Austin Riley?
Yeah, for the same reasons. But it is crazy. Remember everyone talked about, or it was just like kind of a, I hate the word fun fact, but it was kind of a fun fact that like all these Braves were going early in the top 20. And looking back, even just half a season, it was Spencer Strider, it was Acuna, it was Olson, and it was Riley. And then it was Michael Harris.
Michael Harris, yes.
Been better than these other guys. But, like, it is wild to see those top four Braves, which were, like, no doubt surefire first-rounders or wheel picks, all four, just nothing this year. So I still think Austin Riley turns this around. He's heating up lately. But yeah, you're definitely disappointed if you took Riley because if we look at this board, and I'll post the first base and third base boards out on Twitter on Wednesday at some point when the episode hits. But if you look around Austin Riley, yeah, you either didn't have the chance to get J-Ram. You may have passed on Ellie and you took Riley over Rafael Devers and Gunnar Henderson. Those the other top five first basemen have all been top four producers so far through the first half. And then you've got Austin Riley at 17. To me, that makes it hurt like even more, is that like, yes, you picked the wrong guy, but literally any other pick at the position this early would have been an awesome pick. That just, it's a double whammy.
Yeah, this position is hurting me tremendously because, like, I like J-Ram, I like Devers. Ellie, I did the whole, I said all draft season, I'll have him on one team. I do have him on one of my three OCs, and that's pretty awesome. Gunner has zero shares. Gunner was a gigantic problem for me, and he is just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then you got Royce Lewis, who we all knew was a gamble, and when healthy, he's like probably the number two third baseman of the position, maybe third, second or third, but it's the old when healthy adage. So that's a bummer. Let's talk about our guy. Manny Machado's 10th. Is this more about how bad the position is, or that Manny's just been good enough?
That's a good point. It's a good point. I was surprised to see Manny be 10th. I think it's a little bit of a combination. I think it's the position is a little bit light. I don't think it's as bad as first base. I also think our perception of Manny Machado is worse than he's actually been. Manny Machado has been on an absolute tear over the last month. And real quick, before I read Machado's last month, we do have a comment from Steven in the chat about Austin Riley, right? You know, I said Austin Riley's been good lately. I didn't realize this good. Austin Riley last 30 days hitting almost 300, 9 home runs in the last month for Austin Riley. So not only has he turned it around, he is Austin Riley again. So bodes quite well for Austin Riley's second half. But yeah, back to Manny Machado. Manny Machado's last month hitting 310, 6 home runs. So yes, the position's a little bit down. Maybe that's, you know, it's somewhat easy in quotes to crack the top 10 with a half decent line. But Manny Machado's been a lot better lately, and you do wonder how much that injury affected Manny in the first, you know, month of the season.
He's got 50 RBIs too, so he's doing the important stuff there in San Diego. You got Bregman. He's going to finish closer to Manny by the end of this one, because Bregman's another one of those guys. He's 20th at the position. He went deep again on Tuesday night.
Yeah,
he's been playing much better of late. Like, you look at his stat line, it's, you know, 254, 11 homers, not flashy, but how many times do we talk about it in the preseason where we're just like, yeah, by the end of the year, here's Alex Bregman, like, putting up this consistent profile that's a top 100 player time and time again. And you look at it, it was 216 in March, April, 221 in May, 310 in June, 286 in July. I think we're in for a nice second half here from Alex Bregman.
Agreed. And I think the Astros lineup, the Astros just got off to an awful, awful start to the season, especially on offense. And I think that's only going to help Alex Bregman. So, number 20 overall at the position for Alex Bregman. I still don't think that's a bad pick by the end of the season. I think Alex Bregman, maybe he doesn't return top 8 or whatever, but fringe top 10, top 12, I think that works. So,
Quick in the chat here, Rico says, are you guys worried about the barrel percent trending the wrong way for Bregman? I'm not, because if you look at Bregman's career, he's never been a big barrel guy outside of like maybe 22. It's been anywhere from like 4 to 6 most of his career, it feels like.
Yep. And he's always been, you know,
a cool guy.
Love to talk homer to barrel. And Alex Bregman's always on one of those bloom boards with on the higher end of homer to barrel a lot because of the park, the pole, all that stuff. So I'm not too worried about Bregman there.
We already talked about Steery, 6th of the position. Arenado at 23. Cabrian Hayes at 38. I had a lot of Cabrian Hayes. That one, Cabrian Hayes isn't even really 12-team viable anymore, folks. Barely 15. It's a rough go there. And you got Josh Young, who we liked. He's been hurt forever. Jake Berger starting the hit. It's been disappointing. Then it gets to a little more greenish. Like, Morel's not green because he's hitting horrific, but power's there. Mikel Garcia, who's going to hit on, he's 9th in the position. That's been an up and down season from Mikel Garcia. Like, it's been the best hitter in baseball to non-existent to pretty good to non-existent again.
Yeah, a lot of April 6th victory laps. Mikel Garcia, and then he went to hell, and we end up with a 230 batting average, just 6 home runs. Not great, but 21 steals and good counting stats, 53 runs. Mikel Garcia, I don't know if he's leading off anymore for the Royals, but was leading off pretty much every day for the Royals. That's why you get 53 runs and 43 RBI for the guy too. So A little bit of a valuation question here, like how much is Fangraphs rating those 21 steals? But Mikel Garcia is I think been more than fine at the position. One guy just real quick wanted to highlight, Bubba, who I had no idea what to do about and thus didn't draft, was Ha-Seong Kim. Ha-Seong Kim was the third baseman off the board and is now like 14th. So kind of an anticlimactic. Yeah, he's kind of on par, but I was just really wondering what Ha-Seong Kim was doing.
Yep, no, I'm with you there. He's been up and down a little better of late as the Padres as a whole. The Padres are a team I've mentioned a lot, I think, on this show and others. They seem really boring, but if you look at their overall team, offensive numbers, they're actually pretty good. Like, it's weird. It's really weird. It's a quiet, boring team that's producing quite a bit. There's Esoc again. There's the Candyman. Muncy's dead, so that's fine. He's toast. Like, just be glad you guys maybe listened to one thing I said all season. But here's two or three, even if you want to go Chapman, because you did like some Chappy. Ryan McMahon, number 11. I've always been team Ryan McMahon, no matter who tells me no. I've always been team Ryan McMahon. And then there's the mascot at 12, and that's because of a pretty rough start to the year. But I bet you if you just did like the last 30 to 60 days, he's probably a top seven. He doesn't have all the power, so maybe that's it. But batting average, best batting average in baseball.
I'll give you credit for the Ryan McMahon. I was off of him. I was completely off, and I don't think you convinced me. You tried, yep. But
there might be a side bet on that one too with something.
I'm a little bit afraid to look. Yeah. I'm a little bit afraid to look and see what that side bet is, because I think you're right. I think we did have some kind of side bet with McMahon, who I will say like is a consistent 240, 250 hitter throughout his career. That's at 274 this year with really without much improvement to the strikeout rate or anything like that. It's pretty much BABIP. So I think Ryan McMahon.
Does he play in a ballpark that benefits BABIP? I'm just asking for a friend.
Yes, but he has his whole career, and it's 30 to 40 points, sometimes 50 points higher than previous seasons. So McMahon, hey, kudos.
Maybe his age 29 season is the new 27. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, exactly. I'm afraid to look at our bet sheet and see what stud I compared to Ryan McMahon this year.
Well, what I'm curious about, and this is a big if the Rockies are smart, which I think we can all know they aren't, McMahon should get traded this deadline if the Rockies have any competency. Like, they've already given away Arenado. Like, St. Louis could use a third baseman still. So you could throw McMahon that direction, or some other team like the Dodgers playing the third baseman. So, you know, Miguel Vargas ain't the answer. There's ways to go get McMahon somewhere else. So we'll see. But do you want to talk Chapman? Eighth overall at the position. That actually surprised me. He's that high. I know he's been good, but that's eighth. That shows you, man, outstanding stuff. Their OBP skills, he's stealing, which is fun.
And that's where I was going to harp on is the bags. That's why Matt Chapman is where he is. Just a random ass spike in stolen bases in the last 3 years.
Especially for a team that's not stealing bases.
Exactly. On a team that where Thairo Estrada has run three times all season. Matt Chapman, I think, has doubled his career high in stolen bases in a half season. He already has 8 stolen bases, 12 home runs, hitting 244. Like, yeah, Matt Chapman's been awesome. And I think I don't think this ADP reflects it, but remember, Matt Chapman didn't sign until late. So a lot of early drafters were just kind of assuming Matt Chapman would sign and get a job somewhere, which is a fair assumption given the defense. But yeah, Matt Chapman's been great. A little bit, I would say, lucky, because I don't think anyone planned for 8 steals, potentially, you know, 14, 15 bags if you prorate that out across the whole season. Just random as hell, but if you took Chapman, you'll take it.
Yep, most definitely. What do you have for breakouts here? Because this is a list that I'm very excited to hear for obvious selfish reasons.
Why? What do we got? All right.
Let's see. I have shares of all these guys on drafted. I love, this is where it feels good that our, at least for like prep goes well when these guys that were late picks, but we liked them for like draft and holds, just they're too late in drafts for like a 12 team league. At least like the, I guess, process is going in the right direction. Like, you saw the skill sets. So to see them break out, it's a catch 22. Like, it sucks they're not on your fab teams trying to win thousands of dollars. But the fact that you're on board and you're like benefiting somewhat, if that makes any sense to anybody, I find satisfaction in this.
All right. So these guys are, we got 3 breakouts at the position. We've got Jordan Westberg, who's probably the next one on this list, like probably the 25th third baseman off the board. Jordan Westbrook was going outside the top 300. He is the number 7 third baseman. Then you've got Jose Miranda, who's hotter than the sun right now, undrafted, is the 13th third baseman off the board. And then Slick Willie.
Yes, Slick Willie
Castro, 325 ADP, and the 16th third baseman so far through the first half. So, Bubba, what did you see in this trio?
Westbrook, I loved. He's been on my tout team. Big fan there. He had the second base, third base eligibility, the quote-unquote phrase everybody loves, prospect pedigree.
He struggled in his rookie year, so the price was – this is that classic –
Cheap. I like the hit tool. I didn't think the power would be this good. Went deep again on Tuesday, but I figured the hit tool in a really good offense was something I was looking at. And then Willie, we loved Willie because he plays everywhere. The Twins can't stay healthy. Like, that was just kind of a draft and hold 101. Like, Willie will find his playing time at some point, which he has every year of his career, no matter if it's been Detroit or Minnesota. Here we are again. So that's been pretty fun as well. Miranda's one of those guys that I'm angry for redrafts because I picked him up everywhere. He was playing good enough to keep around. The week Royce Lewis came back, he didn't play at all. I put like one game.
I remember that.
Like, okay, time to drop him because like this is how playing time is going to work out. And then now he's been playing like every single day, and it's just been – that's one of those that it was the right move at the time. It's the right move that backfired in a royal way though.
Yep. And it is funny just looking back. So you mentioned the Miranda playing time thing, and we sometimes overreact to some of those things. Michael in the chat, remember when Westbrook's playing time was weird early and we dropped him? Anyone? Just me. I dropped Colton Cowser early on, and maybe in hindsight, like that hasn't been an awful drop, but it is interesting that you need to jump on playing time. You need to react to it. But to drop someone because they're not playing for like the last 4 days or whatever, it sounds like a good idea at the time. And a lot of times it is, but sometimes you get burned by it too.
Yep. It's the fun. It's the love and the hate that we have with fantasy baseball is it's almost like you need to jump quickly at the opportunity. But if you're already rostering a guy, maybe give him an extra week or two, but then you might wait too long and miss the opportunity. So it's a whole just yin and yang of what is going on with that kind of fun stuff here. Randy Russell has a chat for a question. Morning, boys from Ukraine. Was offered Pablo Lopez and McMahon for Devers. Is it me or does Ryan need a haircut? No, Ryan's got a good looking haircut there, so he's good.
Randy, this is nothing.
Yeah.
This is nothing compared. We should have done this show through COVID. I went a year and a half without cutting it. So
Pablo and Ryan McMahon for Devers.
What do you think, man?
I would do McMahon.
I mean, it's hard in a trade. It's hard to like say pitching versus hitting, whatever what you need. I'd go Devers and McMahon. I mean, Devers is the best player in that deal.
So. If you need pitching, you take the Pablo McMahon side. But it's the thing I always say is okay. So you're it's two for one. Who's the second of the one? Because you have to drop someone or add someone essentially.
Right.
So there's always
better use pitching and exactly. Yeah. Granted, trading Pablo Lopez is somewhat addition by subtraction this year, unfortunately. But
and one last thing I want to mention with the Miranda thing goes back to that was a big time prospect that just never really got it going. So it was a conversation we've had with a lot of players on these boards and we'll have with other boards is sometimes we need to kind of maybe believe in, you know, they're young, develop stuff like that. We'll see. Doesn't always pan out, but he's proving that it does. It's at least 50-50, if not more, on some of these big time guys. So.
I've got one more thing to add to your one more thing on Jose Miranda. Baseball HQ puts out what we call a QBAB metric, which is quality of batted balls. And over the last month, so it looks at your average exit velo, average launch angle, and consistency of your launch angle. How tight is it? You want to avoid pop-ups and ground balls and have consistent line drives. Jose Miranda has a perfect QBAB score over the last month. It's something we put in the forecaster, but it just shows the quality of contact for Jose Miranda, who I was a little bit off on because the power wasn't there. It was more the contact that was there, good batting average foundation and base. But the power is absolutely developing and actually getting better as the season goes on. So just wanted to throw that one out there too.
Yep, absolute stud. So it's fun to see there. Any final thoughts though? Because this basically, I think, supports the struggles, at least in FAB this year, and just the position as a whole, first base and third base. I think it'll be fun when we do our position recaps every year, because we go back and it's almost the same board, but with a full season, because we look at ADP and how the production was and all these things. And it, it goes to show you again, this is a position, at least third base, that you got to go early. First base, you kind of had to go early, but there was some room. Third base, there really wasn't any room to mess around. Like third base, it was pretty cut and dry unless you kind of got lucky late. And again, I made the comment that first base, like a McMahon, a Rengifo, these are guys you want like at your middle and corner. You don't want to rely on them at third base if you don't have to. Now you can, because there's many ways to build a team, but that's not the end game goal.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say too. These breakouts, the Westberg, Miranda, Castro, like Westberg, you're maybe using at second base instead. Willie Castro plays everywhere, which is why we took him. So really, like third base only guys, there hasn't been a lot. So again, not to sound like a broken record, but it kind of validates what we've been seeing and saying almost every Fab preview show, is like, if you have a tiebreaker between a corner and an outfield guy rest of season, go with corner, because outfielders have been much more plentiful. And I mean, this is why we're just not seeing these kind of top 20 first base, third base at the position that were being drafted outside the top 25.
100% agree. And catchers are just amazing. So we don't have to talk about that. Couple listener questions before we head on here from Twitter. Stephen Crawford, who's in the chat as well. Kota Senga or Jeffrey Springs to pick up and store in my open IL spot?
It's a total crapshoot. I'd go Kota Senga.
Yeah, I'm going Senga too. Looked decent again in his rehab start on Tuesday. Should be back. Well, they should be both back about the same time. Springs might get back a little sooner, but I like Senga long term if he's healthy. So,
yep.
Give me that one. We got Martin Sokolsky. It says the Braves' offense has been uninspiring aside from Ozuna. Who do you guys think finishes the season stronger, Riley or Olson? I'll say Riley.
I'll go Riley too. Yep, I'll go Riley.
And then our buddy BP at futures_bet says, got a cheap Keibert Ruiz in my NL-only league, and I was feeling great about it. And on auction day, not so much anymore. Any chance for a rebound?
Absolutely. I think Ruiz is for the reasons I mentioned earlier. I think he's healthy again. We're seeing that in the numbers and the skills over the past month, and especially in an NL-only league. Like Ruiz will be fine.
Yep, I think he's gonna be very fine. I know he's available in a lot of formats. One thing I would suggest, and it's tough because it's always hard, especially in 10 and 12 team leagues that a lot of people play, to drop certain players because you are so loaded in those formats. But I know I say a lot on the Fab show that go, like I say, you're in Yahoo. I look at Yahoo percentages for my fantasy pros work. It's insane. Like how many guys are available at low roster rates, and you probably have the wrong dudes on your roster. Like it's tough to cut certain players, but there are so many good players out there. You could stream. Like I know Ruiz is a big guy. Like we're just talking catchers in general. There's a lot of dudes out there that you could roster right now over probably some guys you are. So, and that goes for all positions. So I'd recommend maybe spending the All-Star break fine tuning your teams would be one thing to look at.
Nah, right. play Xbox instead over your All-Star break. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
If you're in my OCs, please. Please go
hit me play up at an online game or something.
Yeah. You can DM me. I'll give you Ryan's name. Go play him all you want. I fully endorse that. If you need, I'll pay for half the game, really, if you want, probably. And I don't even know how much they are anymore. It's used to be like 50.
Oh, that's another old moment. I paid for a deluxe edition, and it's $100, man.
Yeah, they used to be 50 or 60 bucks, and you had like a copy in your hand. And I remember saving the case and all that stuff. And yeah, now it's all digital. Like, goodness gracious. We've gone full circle on this show now. So there you go. But final thoughts, Ryan, as we head out of a fun Bloom board. I'm looking forward to middle infield and outfield next week, and then some pitching the following week. It's a fun little exercise that we usually don't do too much in season, but it's nice to kind of get our bearing back to maybe we're overlooking guys or not over whatever, but it's a fun little exercise.
Yeah, I think with the grind of the season, especially with like our Thursday Fab episode, it's so easy to get kind of nailed down in the week to week and lose the kind of the forest from the trees. So hopefully at least for me, it's been good to kind of go back and take that step back and kind of look at this stuff. So we'll definitely do middle infield next show, I guess. I don't know what we'll do with the Fab preview next show, since there aren't really schedules to analyze. Maybe we'll just do CBS ads and then middle infield, something like that.
Yeah, well, Thursday night, we'll figure it out. Do outfield on Tuesday or something. So yeah, we'll keep you guys twice a week. Don't you worry about that. But yeah, Fab's a little different next week. So we'll see how that plays out. And keep the chat going. You guys are awesome tonight. That was outstanding stuff there. Good to be back with you Tuesday night, folks. And we'll be back with you guys Thursday to talk some more fantasy baseball for you. But until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. And for now, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 150, the big 150. Catch y'all next time.